Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servadidio, and I am your host. What I wanted to talk about our show tonight is we're going to be covering some pretty serious topics, but I do feel that it's very important to really explore these topics. It's come up a lot in my private practice and also at the clinic that I'm working at about cutting. There's cutting from all different age groups. There's cutting from young girls to teenagers to young adults to mature adults. And I think it's become such an epidemic that it's something that definitely needs to be addressed. And I know a lot of times there's a lot of confusion about, is cutting a form of suicide? Does cutting lead to suicide? And there's many, many different avenues and different layers that I plan to explore during this show. So let's start with our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, my 13-year-old daughter has been cutting for the last 3 months, and I am very concerned. Why would she do this? What I've found working with young girls and even adults that have issues with cutting is a lot of it have the same theme of feeling helpless, feeling out of control, feeling like they do not have control over their body, their thoughts, their behaviors, or the way other people treat them. So I think one of the things to really start looking at is, what is going on in your 13-year-old's life? I find sometimes a lot of things that are associated with cutting doesn't mean this is definite, but I think to explore if there's been any physical abuse, if there's been any sexual abuse, and anything to do with eating disorders, because I find a lot that they go sometimes hand in hand. So to be really careful and really research, look through to see if there's any signs of sexual abuse, physical abuse, or even eating disorders. And I think, why would she do this? Also look, I think what's been coming a lot now, as you've seen on social media, on the news, is bullying. And why bullying would actually start or trigger the cutting is, again, is what I said, feeling helpless, feeling they don't have control, feeling that they need to release something. And a lot of times, a lot of people say, why would they cut themselves? I mean, that's painful. But what they find is cutters feel that it's releasing the pain. It's releasing the emotional pain, the physical pain, the feeling of being helpless. They actually have, in their minds, control over how much pain they'll feel or when they're feeling pain. I know for a lot of people listening to the show, tuning in, is saying, this is you know, not healthy thinking. This is, how could someone even think like this? But this is what happens. I was looking on Psychology Today, and there was an article, Overcoming Self-Sabotage, How to Understand and Regulate Destructive Behaviors. And one of the questions is, so why would someone ever want to inflict pain or injury on himself or herself? And there were some studies conducted by some people called Knock and Princeton, and they suggest that there are four primary reasons for these self-injurious behaviors. Number one, to reduce negative emotions. This can also be maybe not fitting in school. You said your daughter is 13 years old. I think looking around, seeing who her peers are. Is she getting along? Are there certain groups that maybe she's not allowed to be in, or maybe is there bullying going? Number two, to feel something besides numbness or emptiness. This can also be a very frightening feeling for a young person and also an adult. And I think when they say feel something besides numbness or emptiness, that's also to look to see, is there any depression going on? And what are they feeling so numb? And what is that void that they're trying to fill with the cutting, with feeling something? Because sometimes so many things happen if there's been physical abuse, if there's been sexual abuse, bullying, any type of eating disorder. It's almost like a pit, an empty pit. So the cutting somehow brings them back in to feel something. Not that it's positive at all, but I think it's sometimes really looking at, not trying to rationalize, or I think one, what's hard to kind of wrap your mind around this, is there's not a rational reason. It doesn't make sense. You know, you can sit here and you know, negotiate or say, listen, this, if you cut yourself, that's not positive. That's negative. You're going to feel the pain. But I think you have to kind of step out of that mind, that thought process, and really look in to see, what is this person going through? What is your 13-year-old trying to escape from, trying to control from? Third one, to avoid certain social situations. Again, is there bullying at school? Does she feel like she doesn't fit in school? Does she have a lot of friends? Because I know at 13, that's the age when you really start kind of finding your identity, and your friends define you. Your friends are everything. Your social circles are everything. So I think also, maybe if you can, I know it's not always welcomed, and your 13-year-old might be very upset, but I think when her safety comes into up for question, this must be done. I think checking maybe her Facebook page, checking if she's on Twitter, and really seeing what's going on. What are her statements? And I know there's a lot of confusion saying, is cutting suicide? Does it lead to suicide? Most of the time they say cutting does not lead to suicide. That is not, cutting is not usually a suicidal act or an attempt to commit suicide. But what happens is, for cutters, you do it so many times, there's a danger that you might hit the wrong vein. I mean, you do things so many times, there's a huge chance that, you know, you actually might hurt yourself. And I think that's why it goes, you know, the teen can go too far. If they hit a main vein or an artery by accident, they can cause major blood loss. And I think that's what's really serious about the cutting. I mean, it's not something to take seriously. And yes, you know, I'm not saying it cannot lead to suicide. I think it can. But usually with cutting, what they're saying in a lot of these studies and what's going on, it's also something to express these feelings of not being in control. And the fourth one is to receive social support. And I think a lot of times it's, people might think, oh, the person is being manipulative. The person is just trying to get attention. And I find, you know, I don't think it's just something as easy as that or as artificial as that. It's something very serious. It's not something you can say, you know what, she'll get over it. Don't give this person attention because they're just going to keep doing it. I think it's really saying if your 13-year-old daughter has resorted to cutting, it's pretty serious. There's something pretty serious going on. And I think, for 3 months, hopefully this is, you know, this is something that you're able to know there just for 3 months, but really, I think getting her into therapy and finding out what was the first thing that really triggered this, what made her think, because then there's also another thing that they're saying, cutting among friends may seem like a stretch, but it's becoming increasingly common, much like an epidemic, a drug use that is shared among friends and peers. This I got from an article called Teens and Self-Injury, Cutting Versus Suicide. And what happens is these friends see their peer cutting. And at first they might be like, wow, you know, and you tell them, my child would never do that. And maybe your child at the time was like, I would never do that. I would never hurt myself. That's ridiculous. But like anything we know with young kids and when you're around this age, you're very impressionable. You do what the group does. So you kind of maybe saying, oh, you know, maybe I'll try it. I think if there's alcohol being involved or if there's drugs, it becomes serious. So your teen might have not started out with a very serious problem why they started the cutting. It might have been, you know, their best friend cut and she said, all right, let me just try. But I think it's very serious, the whole act of doing it, and to be really going to your teen and saying, you know, being honest. And I know it's a very hard thing to approach your teen and say this. And I've worked with a lot of parents whose children have been cutting. And it's very frightening. And they're very shocked. They're very angry. There's a lot of blaming themselves. What can I do? And I think that by telling them, you know, you're just not going to cut anymore, you can't do this, it's not the way to go. It's really, I think, understanding them and really opening up the line of communication with your 13-year-old daughter and really talk to her, why does she feel like doing this? And I think really ask her, and I think you should also find and ask her, are there any suicidal ideations? Is there any ideas of wanting to end it all? You know, what is this negative emotion that she's trying to reduce? Usually, typically with cutting, is they're trying to reduce a negative emotion. They're trying to control something. And it's almost like an emotional pain. What are they trying to get through? And I think what the scary thing is, what a lot of these teens, if it's a peer thing that everybody's doing, They're sharing cutting implements that can also risk your teen's, you know, put your teen's risk of contracting a disease like hepatitis, HIV. I think that's something really serious to be exploring with your teen, is that this is pretty serious with it, you're cutting. This is not just something that you do because your friends are doing. So I think that also opens up a whole other avenue to really explore with your teen. And I think right now is, I'm not sure if you, your 13-year-old daughter is seeing a therapist or has been evaluated, but I would definitely want you to take your child to get an evaluation, to see a therapist, to see a psychiatrist, and also do a suicide risk assessment, just to make sure. I always say on the show, safety first. You always should do safety. Sometimes, you know, as I said before, cutting doesn't always lead to suicide. They can be two different things, but I feel like don't take the chance. This is a cry for help. This is something so serious. It's a way of self-sabotage, and I think that's what's very, very important to look at. It's a way of self-sabotage, and that your teen is using this as a coping mechanism, a negative coping mechanism to deal with stress. And if she starts using this at such a young age, what I'm frightened of, this will be her maladaptive approach to dealing with stress as she goes through life. I work with a lot of women. I have a few men, but I do work with a lot of women now who are in their 40s and 50s, and they have been cutting most of their life. They stop for a while and they go on with their life, but if something very stressful comes up or if a really big trigger comes up, they start cutting. It might not be as deep as they did when they were younger, but It's very serious. And you know what? These cutting marks can leave scars. There's a lot of scarring. And I think also you start looking at it, as they're growing older, you know, if this person goes into the workplace, I've had a lot of the young women that I work with that they're having problems with what they wear because they're scarring on their arms. They're scarring on their legs. And I think if you suspect your teen or your young child of cutting, to really look. Sometimes people cut on their wrist, they cut on their arm. I've had a lot of people cutting on their stomach, they cut on their inner thigh, and they might start first where they can hide it. Or, you know, they can maybe, they do it in the winter and they do it a place where they know they're not going to have to wear shorts, so it will heal. But I think you keep cutting in the same place, it's going to scar. So I know this is it's a tough thing to do, but I think it's really sitting down with your teen and saying, what is going on? And they use this approach of cutting, the self-sabotage. It's almost how people use alcohol or drugs to help them forget about their problems. The cutting helps them forget. It distracts the mind. It triggers something in their head where they're focusing on the pain. They're focusing on what they're doing. So all these other problems that are going on, or if they're being bullied or abused, they can focus on this, and they're not almost taken over by these other negative thoughts, negative emotions, negative pain. And I think that's what it comes to. And then they start using this for so long as a way to deal with things. So I think definitely with your 13-year-old daughter, this is serious. I mean, this is something definitely to get her into a program. A lot of the times they use CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and also DBT for cutting. That is dialectical behavior therapy. I went up and I have the definition of it, so I just like to read the definitions. I really like to educate my listeners so you really know what's going on and understanding it. And I know sometimes it gets so, these definitions are kind of wordy, they're hard to grasp, but I would like to give it to you and then be able for your own time to go over it, look at it, and we can really explore it. And if any time you would like me to go over it more, or to maybe do a show on it, please send in a question, send in your request to insightintohealing@gmail.com. Or send me a private message, because we are on Facebook, Insight into Healing, and I can go into this. So what they said, DBT is a therapy designed to help people change patterns of behavior that are not effective, such as self-harm, suicidal thinking, and substance abuse. This approach works towards helping people increase their emotional and cognitive regulation by learning about the triggers that lead to reactive states and helping to assess which coping skills to apply in the sequence of events, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that lead to understanding undesirable behavior. And what they mean is increase the emotional and cognitive regulation. What they want to do is start teaching our teens. I also do this with adults, and I think it's an amazing tool to learn, to be able to regulate your emotions, regulate your thoughts. Because sometimes I'm not sure if with your 13-year-old daughter, if she has severe mood swings or if she can get really, really upset and really, really sad or really, really angry. What DBT will do will help them regulate and say, okay, when this person says something nasty about my clothes in school, I get very emotional. I feel like I feel sad. I feel bullied. I feel like nobody likes me. I feel like everybody, that starts going into the cognitive thoughts. I feel like everybody's staring at me. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. So when they have that trigger, okay, I'm going to go cut to release this pain. If someone's making fun of me, someone's saying something nasty, going into the bathroom and cutting, well, to them, this is what's regulating their emotion and their thoughts. But what they do in DBT, they teach them, okay, this person said something nasty, almost like what we do when I start doing anxiety or anger management. We take a deep breath. We start learning better ways. We take away these negative coping skills, these negative defenses, and we start putting in positive ones. And it's hard, as I said before, to rip out one defense, even though this is maladaptive. This is not a healthy way for your 13-year-old daughter to be coping with stress or whatever's going on. To just rip it away from her is very frightening. This is, in some way, has been, which I know makes no sense, has been a way of her to cope. So we start peeling back the layers and really exploring with her what is a better way when you start feeling out of control, when you start feeling like you can't handle other people's behaviors. And this will really start teaching her to say, really take an assessment, really, as I say before in other shows, a self-inventory of herself, of her emotions. And I think later on that's going to actually be one of our journaling exercises for the end of the show, because it's really sparked a lot of interest in me and a lot of ways of helping people learning how to regulate their emotions, regulate their thoughts. It's such a common thing that happens in adults, children, and everybody. So I think it's really something we can go over. So I find this DBT will really teach them the skills. And there's many DBT programs, dialectical behavior therapy programs, all over at different hospitals. You can even look up DBT. They have residential programs where you can stay there. They have groups. They have skill groups. And I think it's really tailored towards what you're looking for. But I think it's really interesting how to work with each person. I said each person's case is so different, but I think it's really being able to find out what's going on. And it says DBT assumes that people are always doing the best that they can, but either are lacking the skills or are influenced by positive or negative reinforcement that interfere with one's functioning. So with the cutting, what I found is a lot of the outside world becoming overwhelming, the outside world taking over, the feeling of I can't control this, what's going on, all this negative reinforcement, all this negative stimulation, all these negative things coming at them, that they use the cutting to somehow release it, to somehow, you know, control it. So with DBT, they will really start teaching that. And also with cognitive behavioral therapy, which is CBT, will start teaching your 13-year-old daughter the different skills. So yes, I definitely think, you know, get her into therapy, get her evaluated, get her into a program so she can really address this now so this doesn't become something that's going to be following her for the rest of her life. And I can understand your concern. But, you know, see the light at the end of the tunnel. There's a lot of great resources out there. There's a lot of great programs. There's a lot of different things. So I think it's really a great thing to reach out. As I say, get a treatment team. Really reach out, get a support, and try not, don't keep this as a secret, because you know what? It only gets worse. This isn't something that you just brush under the rug and hope she'll get over it. It's not. She needs professional help for doing this. So I wanted to go into our first song, which I found was very fitting for this question. It's by Laura Story, and the name of the song is called Blessings. What I do is I usually pick these songs because I find that the words are very moving and very relate to a lot of the topics that we have talked to. So please let me know. I hope you enjoy this song. It's a tough subject, but I think it's something that really, really can help us really see what's going on.
Pray for healing, for prosperity.
That song is Blessings. Let's go on to our second question. Dear Insight into Healing, my 10-year-old daughter is having difficulty maintaining peer relationships. I find she defines herself by how many friends she has. We just moved to a new state and she is in a new school and is having difficulty making friends. What can I do to help? Well, this brings up a very big topic. I know with a new school, a new state, and moving, and she's about that age, about 10 years old, it's when you start really finding peer relationships, really defining yourself with who you hang out with. And I think what you can really do is exploring this with her. I think really sitting down and talking to your 10-year-old daughter and acknowledging that she's having a difficult time. I think that is very powerful. I know sometimes parents hope to think, I just won't say it because I don't want to bring it to light. and maybe it'll just go away, and I don't want to make my child aware of it if she's not aware of it. I think that's where the danger starts coming in. I think it's really being open and honest with your 10-year-old daughter and explaining to her, you know, these are really huge things for a child and also for an adult. I mean, these are huge life events. Moving, starting a new school, and moving to a new state, making new friends. I mean, these are even for adults, these are tough events to go. I mean, yes, they're positive, you're moving, you know, they could be something very helpful. But I think there's also negativity towards it. It's very hard to start over, to start defining yourself. And I think really going over with your 10-year-old daughter saying, when she said she's having difficulties maintaining peer relationships, what is going on? What is her role in maintaining having this difficulty? And I think, what are the peers? What is she seeking out in these friendships? Because sometimes when children move around a lot, they don't feel a sense of stability. They don't feel a sense of security. So if, say, someone says something nice into school or says, I like your shoes, they become too attached. They kind of, like, cling to that person because this person gave them some sort of attention. This person gave them some sort of stability. And, you know, it's hard for a 10-year-old child, and it's also hard for an adult sometimes to be able to sit back and say, is this person good for me? And saying, let me get to know this person before I get so attached to them. Because if she's maybe picking people who aren't healthy peers or not able to reciprocate the way she wants to be a peer, she wants to communicate, this can be very damaging. I think for a 10-year-old girl, when this is all beginning forming her identity, this is something that can scar her and go through her with life. So I think it's really asking her, you know, how do you approach friends? And what is going on with maintaining peer relationships? And that is a tough age. I mean, we've all been there. It's a tough age to make friends. And it's a tough age to be in. I think between that and when that age, 10 to like 15, 16, when all the different things start happening to the body, I don't know if she's been forming as a young woman now or if she has her menstrual cycle, but I think that's also something too, that when some girls are more developed than other girls. So I think that starts becoming an uncomfortable thing going on. So I think discussing that with her, really saying what's going on and what type of people are you choosing to be peers? How are they reacting to you? What are your communication skills? I work with a lot of young girls and some young boys that seem to overcompensate when they meet someone, too much too soon. They give them all their toys. They want to be with that person 24 hours. They want them to sleep over. They don't want them to have other friends. They want to be their center of attention. And even for an adult, that's really kind of scary. That's almost a red flag when someone wants too much too soon or they want to be everything. So I think exploring one with your daughter, is that something she's doing? Or another thing I've found with children that I've worked with, there's been a lot of moving and starting over, is they kind of shut down. They kind of cut those feelings off because it's better not to feel and expect that loss. So they protect themselves, so they really won't feel it all, so they won't really get attached to other people, because they might think, you know, I'm going to move anyway. What's the use of me getting closer to this person? What's the use of me forming a relationship? And I think what becomes kind of dangerous and something to look for, and that is when your daughter gets older, how is she going to relate to other people, to peers, to romantic interests, to work, to relationships, to her family? Because this is almost, you know, if she's using this mechanism of kind of cutting people off and cutting her feelings back to be able to survive in her mind, we want to make sure, again, this becomes like a maladaptive way of dealing with stress, with dealing with change. So we'd really want to express that with her. And I think exploring with her, saying, you know what, tell me, what is it like when you see someone that sounds like a friend? How do you approach them? What are your conversations are? What are you looking for in a friend? What do you think a friend should be? What's your definition of a friend? What qualities do they possess? And I think all the same, well, what qualities do you possess? What do you bring to the table as a friend? What could you do for in a peer relationship? How can you two communicate? How can you be good friends? You know, what are boundaries? Because I think a lot of children sometimes haven't been taught what boundaries are. You know, they're children. You learn as you go along. But I think it's also doing that, really going over, you know, what are your boundaries? What type of activities do you want to do? Do you feel like you're pushing too much with a child? I think also, how does your daughter react when, as you said, they're not maintaining peer relationships? they're not doing too well. What happens? I mean, is there an argument? Is there a blow up? Is there a cutoff? Does she just say, no, I don't want to hang out with that person anymore. They're not, I don't like them anymore. I think really taking a look at your daughter's patterns and exploring them with her. And, you know, it's not an easy topic, and it's tough, and, you know, your daughter, it's upsetting. But I think being able to address this now will help her in the way she forms relationships, is in how she is in a relationship, how she maintains relationships in the future. This is a really crucial time in her life, and I think it's a really great learning experience right now for you, for your daughter, on what to do. I think also, you know, maybe speaking to somebody in school. If there's a guidance counselor, does she have a favorite teacher? I think asking the teacher, asking other people in school, if you trust them, what are their take on it? Because I bet they see this all the time. And I think getting maybe a professional from the school or someone that's worked with this before to meet with your daughter. And it's not that your daughter needs therapy, that there's something going on. I think that it's, you know, have her speaking to the guidance counselor. There's a lot of big change. There's a lot of things going on for a 10-year-old to handle. And sometimes it's too much for one child, for this 10-year-old, to carry all of this. What I usually say is sometimes children are thought of or forced or somehow pushed to carry an emotional load, a physical load, a mental load that they should not be carrying. So I think it's really being aware of what is going on. You know, what is, you know, how is she handling this? How are you handling it? And making sure you're not parentifying your child. I work a lot with parents and their children and what things should be discussed in front of your child and what things shouldn't. You know, a child, yes, you say the child is there, they're very smart, they can handle it. She's still a child. She might be very smart. She might show you that she can handle it. But I think it's also remembering a lot of children blame themselves. They take responsibility. And it's like, no, she would never think that. But they do. So I think you really, as a parent, have to be aware of how your daughter is handling this, what she's seeing, what she's doing. I mean, how are you reacting to the new school? How are you reacting to the new move in the new state? Because I think she'll mirror a lot of your behavior if there's any negativity. So I think really going over and speaking with her and saying, you know, it's been a tough couple of times. I'm not sure how many times you've had to move. But so, you know, it's been really tough. I just kind of wanted to check in with you and see what's going on. And I think also talking to her teacher, talking to the principal, talking to a social worker at school, and really saying, you know, what do you see? Is there any red flags? Because this is something really serious that could lead to something serious. So I think what you can do to help is really, one, I would speak to your daughter first. See what's going on. Check if there's any safety concerns. As I say, safety first. See if there's anything to be concerned about. And two, if there's really not, maybe really discussing with somebody at school about what they feel is the best thing. Also, you know, maybe getting her into another program. Maybe it's something outside of school. Does she have any hobbies? Does she like to dance? Does she like to draw? Maybe putting her in a class at the Y or in a different group for young girls or young, you know, a group that she can make that of her own. So, you know, even if maybe school, it's hard for her to maintain peer relationships, letting her know that there's other ways that she can have relationships, there's other areas, and giving her a lot of options so she's almost not forced to try and force to maintain these peer relationships, that she can be able to reach out to others and other resources. So thank you. Please write in. Let me know what's going on. If you need, give us an update on the show. Let's go to our third question. Dear Insight into Healing, I'm very concerned about my 12-year-old son. Due to my husband's job, we relocate every 2 years. I know this is a crucial time in my son's life, a time for him to be forming his identity. I am concerned he might be suicidal. What should I be looking for? Well, one, I think definitely if you have a feeling that he might be suicidal, I would definitely talk to your son. Do not wait for an obvious red flag or an obvious sign. This is serious. If you feel like your son is suicidal, I think you need to really speak to him. And what I mean is, and he might not be able to verbalize it, but I think bringing it to his attention, asking him, you know, I've noticed you've been really sad. You know, you're concerned about him, that he might be suicidal. What is he showing? Is he showing depression? Is he isolating? Is he cutting himself off? Are there a lot of mood swings, feelings of hopelessness, feelings of not caring? Is he giving his toys away? Is he giving things that he really enjoyed, things that he had, like his favorite game, his favorite bike, his favorite baseball card. Is he giving it away? Is he getting rid of things? I think that's really serious. And asking your son, you know, do you have thoughts of hurting yourself? Do you have thoughts of self-harm? And I know for this child, it might be too much for you to say, I don't know if I really want to go down this avenue. But I think it's really bringing it to the forefront and saying, listen, I'm really concerned about what's going on. And saying, if he has ideas of hurting himself, is there a plan? What is the plan? Does he have access to the plan? I mean, if he's a lot of young children taking pills, are there pills in the house? Does he feel like he might want to jump out the window, jump off a bridge? I think, is there one close by? And I know this is a very serious topic, and it's very serious, but I think it's really looking at what's going on. I think there needs to be an increase of awareness that suicide has become such a huge public health problem that can really be addressed. And I think a lot of times, you know, we don't want to talk about it, we don't want to go there because it's such a frightening thing. But it's serious. I have some statistics from the chronological assessment of suicide events. One completed suicide in America every 15 minutes. In 2010, there were 38,364 completed suicides for the year. It's the 10th leading cause of death across all ages, third most common cause of death in 15 to 24-year-olds. Number five, second leading cause of death in 25 to 34-year-olds. Number six, from 1952 to 1992, the rate of suicide tripled in the age group of 15 to 24-year-olds. I mean, what's really scary about that is I know there's all this, I guess, just this talk about bullying. I think really finding out with your son if he's moving from all these schools, is there bullying going on? And I know I speak about it a lot. But it's not just, you know, kids will be kids and they need to deal with other kids. Sometimes people don't like them. It's really very serious. The bullying has led, as we see on the news and we see on social media, there's been a lot of completed suicides from this. I think roughly 50% of people who go on to kill themselves have seen a physician with 1 to 2 months, usually a non-psychiatrist. So I would talk to, has he been to the doctor recently or any physicals? I would speak to them and say, listen, do you see any signs? Have you noticed that my son is pulling back? I think once you speak to him, I'm not sure if he'll be able, if he is suicidal, if he'll be able to address it, if he will admit it. But I think really exploring to him, is there feelings of sadness? Is there feelings of loss? Is there a feeling of emptiness? And really exploring that with him and taking him to be evaluated. And also, is there any event that really triggered it? I know you said you've moved a lot and relocating. Again, as I said, moving is a huge, huge event. And I think it can trigger a lot of things, especially that he's at this age where he's defining himself, he's looking at things. I think it's really saying what's going on. And if he does say that, you know, he's having some ideas of hurting himself, I really, you know, it's hard to go here, but what's the lethality of his means of hurting himself? You know, is it what's his likelihood of being discovered? I mean, are there any letters? I think also looking about what is around. Does he have access to a weapon? Does he have access to something? And, you know, really addressing with your son the concerns. And I know a lot of parents hope that, you know, maybe he'll just get over it. Maybe he'll feel a little bit better if he makes some friends. But it's a very serious, serious thing. So really going in there and really talking to him. And also, I think, doing a safety contract with your son. And what a safety contract is you can write it down. You could probably find one on the internet. Just a basic thing where you're contracting for safety. This doesn't mean this is going to deter him from hurting himself or stop him. But I think it's a way of assessing where he is and really explaining to him the seriousness. When I do a safety contract with one of my clients, I first start with, what are situations that upset you? What things get you sad? What things get you angry? What things make you feel helpless? Is it moving? Is it when someone ignores you in school? Is it failing a test? Is it not doing well at a sport? And putting that down. And so you say, okay, so then you're aware, and your child is aware, these are things that cause a lot of stress. And then what I usually say, what would it look like if you were really upset? How would I know? How would I know, okay, this isn't just a usual, I'm having a bad day. How would I know this is something that's really serious? And I think that's what really starts going into. I start isolating. I start not talking to others I start giving my prized possessions away. I'm crying. I'm very angry. I'm fighting with my brothers. I'm fighting with my sisters. So I think, or I'm fighting with you, my parents, like breaking things, hurting, you know, a family pet, which is very, very serious. And I think that's going to be another show, that if your child is getting very physical with a family pet, that's a huge thing. That's not just kids being kids. That's really, really a huge red flag that there's something very, very serious going on. So then after we say, what would it look like that you're feeling this way? What things have helped you in the past get through this? A lot of times it's talking to a counselor, talking to a friend, reading a comic book, throwing a baseball, playing basketball. So then you're really outlining for your child too what this person, you're saying, okay, now this is what we can do. So when the child is feeling these feelings again, which are very overwhelming, which are very frightening, that he'll be saying, okay, mom said last time as I told her that I like to throw a baseball. Then your child will start throwing the baseball. So I think doing that and really saying, who is the first person you would contact if you felt these thoughts coming on? So then the person, you're also identifying an immediate support. What's somebody at school? What's somebody at home? What's somebody in the neighborhood? So then everything, I think, is really outlined. Everything is on the table. And what I find, it really brings an awareness for each person involved. And also, I think, the seriousness of it. I think sometimes, you know, children or the teenagers will get angry and say, you know, I just want to end it all. I just want to do this. It's a very serious, serious thing. When someone comes into my office and says, I want to hurt myself, I take it very seriously. I really go through the whole safety contract. I go through on a scale from 1 to 10. 1, you wouldn't hurt yourself. 10, you would hurt yourself. What would you do? Where are you? And I think really exploring that too. And really saying, you know, this is very, very serious. How would you deal with this? What's going on? And I think then you start looking at gathering information on the risk factors, gathering information on protective factors, and then different warning signs of suicide. You know, really collecting information about, you know, what is their ideation about? What's their planning? What's their different behaviors? What is their intent? And really finding out, you know, do they want people to pay more attention? Are they feeling alone? Are they feeling like nobody's paying attention to them? Which can be really serious. I mean, sometimes when there is persistent emotional pain, mental illness, is there substance abuse? I think also if there's a previous suicide attempt or ideation, that's something to be really serious. That adds on to a totally different factor if there's been a history. I think also what's the impulsivity, aggression? Also, how many support systems are available? Are there any barriers to accessing them? Maybe having a psychiatrist, I'm not sure about medication, if that's something, just an avenue that your psychiatrist would feel, but maybe seeing if there's medication. Is there a family history of suicide? Is there a family history of high conflict or violence? Family a history of substance abuse? And I think really just checking out what is going on, and also providing coping skills. How does the family as a whole deal with coping skills? How do they problem solve? And also going with your son, if you're some concerned he might be suicidal, I think really going over what are his reasons for living? What is he good at? What are his goals? I find a lot of times when children are younger, at like maybe 13, 14, 10 years old, and there is suicide ideation, they don't see themselves living beyond a certain age, and it's frightening. So I think really going with your teen, going with your child and saying, where do you see yourself when you're 13? Where do you see yourself when you're 16? Giving them that light at the end of the tunnel, giving them that hope. And I think the teaching them that looking forward and moving forward. And I think if your child a lot of times doesn't see a future, I think that might also be something you say, why? What's going on? What are they feeling about? You know, why would they feel like there's no hope for moving forward? What's going on? And I think also saying, is there a history of trauma? Has there been a history of abuse? Has there been a lot of loss? I think really checking to see, is this a factor that could be leading to, you know, him being suicidal? So number one, what I would say is speak to your son. Bring it up, because I feel like if you have concerns, there's something there. As I say, where there's smoke, there's fire. If you're really concerned, you're his mother, you know him the best. If you feel like there's something going on, I would definitely speak to your son and say, I'm concerned, you know, this is what's going on. Then assess if it's suicide ideation, is there a plan? You know, see what the risk is, what his you know, how lethal it is. Does he have access? But I would definitely take him to a psychiatrist. And if it's this adamant, I might take him to the emergency room right away. I wouldn't waste time with this. You know, I really just don't, you know, I always say safety first. I would just take him to be evaluated if you're feeling this. This might be a start of depression. This might be a start of something. I think it's really what you should do. Just have him evaluated. Speak to him. Explain it to him. Get a treatment team and move forward with it, because this is something you don't want to just kind of let it happen. You really want to explore it. You really want to have this put on the table, because, I mean, suicide has become such a huge thing now, and it's become also, and a lot of times it's this epidemic called contagion. When one young teen hurts themselves, you know, ends up killing themselves, other teens follow in their footsteps. Is it because they got the attention, or they feel this is a better way to go? So I think it's really seeing what's going on also with his friends. Are his friends showing these behaviors? Is there cutting going on with his friends? Is there alcohol abuse? It's really, you know, sitting down with your son and exploring all of this, and then also talking to resources and to people that are close to him. Well, let's go into our next song. It's called Do Something by Matthew West.
Up this morning, saw a world full of trouble now. I thought, how do we ever get so far down? And how's it ever gonna turn around? So I turned my eyes to heaven. I thought, God, why don't you do something? Well, I just couldn't bear the thought of people living in poverty, children sold into slavery. The thought disgusted me, so I shook my fist at heaven. Okay.
That was Matthew West, Do Something. Well, our show is coming to an end, so I wanted to give our journaling exercise before we leave. The exercise for this evening is take a personal inventory of yourself. And when I say that, we want to look at your mental health, your emotional health, and your physical health. You can do it either in the morning when you wake up or at the end of the day before you're going to bed. And really write down, how would you rate it? Fair, poor, fair, good, excellent. And then as you go through the week, see if something is fair, something is poor. What type of things can you do to help improve it? Is it mentally? Is it emotionally? Is it physically? What I was planning on doing moving forward with the show, I'm not sure if many of you listeners know, I am also a certified personal trainer and aerobics instructor. I teach and train in kickboxing, Pilates, spinning, body sculpting, aqua aerobics. So I really want to start adding a fitness component, a physical health component to this show. So please feel free to send in any questions on fitness and health, and we can move forward, and I can hopefully give you some exercises and some tips on how to do that. But what I find, in order to be the best you that you can be, you have to address all the areas. You have to address the mind, the body, and the soul. So I hope through this show that I can really start addressing all the different areas. So because I find, in order to be whole, these are things that we need to be aware of. You know, and really taking this personal inventory. Do you feel, is there any depression? Is there anxiety? Do you feel lethargic? Are you having issues sleeping? Is there any physical pains? Should you go see a medical doctor? I am not a medical doctor, so I cannot give any medical advice. I can give you advice on exercises and fitness and also psychotherapy for mental health. I can help you with that and different ideas and provide different coping skills and teaching tools. So please send in any questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com or check out our Facebook page, Insight into Healing. I'd also like you to check out Penelope Film fan page and also leave any comments or questions on the page and let me know moving forward different topics that you would like to go about. Let's go on to one of our songs before the end. It is called J.J. Weeks, Let Them See Me in You.
Take away the melody, take away the songs I sing, take away all the lies, and all the songs you let me write. Does the man I am today say the words you need to say? Let them hear you when I speak. Let them
That was Let Them See You by J.J. Weeks Band. Again, everyone, I want to thank you so much for listening tonight, and thank you so much for all your questions and all your support. Well, good night, and God bless.